applications, vaccine, or additional information, call 381-5503 or 257-4311 or email shelter@odessahumanesociety.org. To see current pets available or to private message the shelter, visit www.facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa.
Throughout the week, we bring you health and accessibility programming. Mondays at 10 a.m., keystrokes. Mondays at 5 p.m., the assistive tech update. Mondays at 5:30 p.m., blind abilities. Wednesdays at 10 a.m., the blindness and disability news hour. The AARP report and the diabetic news programs fill out the hours Thursdays at 4 a.m. and 10 a.m. and Sundays at 6 p.m. Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 67 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Prevention, and I'm your reader, Adrienne Booker, with the Audio Reading Service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Prevention Magazine's March 2021 issue. And now, I'll begin with the editor's note, Babies and Bananas by Sarah Smith. When my sister-in-law was pregnant a couple of years ago, my son was confident she was going to have a girl. Aunt Suzanne doesn't like bananas, he explained matter-of-factly. Suzanne herself had told us about an intriguing study from the UK. Certain dietary habits might be associated with giving birth to a boy, and consuming potassium seemed to be one. Fun fact, I ate a banana at breakfast every single day for 10 years before my son was born. But I guess I didn't do my health editor job super well in explaining the study, as my son made the leap to thinking that someone must eat bananas to have a boy. In all fairness, he was barely six, but he did agree that it had to be more complex when Suzanne's baby was in fact a boy. Suzanne, who is more of a dried apricot person, those are also high in potassium, might not love our banana-based natural remedies, page 26, as much as I do. But I think she and all of you will be interested in our story, Unlock Your Genes, page 62, about another hidden way we influence our children or are influenced by our parents. Our genes have long seemed to be set in stone, but interesting research says we have more control over them than we think. As with the baby boy situation, there's no one simple change that will guarantee you a specific outcome. But the science of good health is booming, and I can only imagine what my son and his cousin will be telling their kids about bananas someday. I'll now be reading an article in Prevention's wellness section entitled Natural Benefits of Bananas by Erika Ellen Sanson. We humans have a long history of eating bananas. They're believed to have been grown as an edible crop since at least 300 BCE. This fruit has high levels of antioxidants and is also a great source of potassium and magnesium, which support heart health, says Bronwyn Carblom, NMD, at Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine Medical Center in Tempe, Arizona. She shares a few healthy ideas for using them. Gut-friendly smoothie. In addition to fiber, bananas contain inulin, a prebiotic that supports digestive health. Combine 1 scoop or 3 tablespoons of chocolate protein powder, 1 scoop of peanut butter powder, 1 cup almond milk or any other kind of milk, and one ripe banana. Optional, add one shot of espresso for flavor and or one tablespoon of flaxseed meal. Blend well and enjoy. If you don't have protein and peanut butter powders, substitute 1/2 cup Greek yogurt, 1/2 cup of any kind of milk, and 1 tablespoon of peanut butter. Add banana and blend. Moisturizing face mask. Make this hydrating vitamin C rich treatment, which is also a mild exfoliator due to the banana's fiber content. Take the pulp of one medium banana, about 7 inches long, ripe enough to have no green on it. Mash it with a fork and combine it with 1 tablespoon of honey. Massage into your face. Let it sit for 1 minute or two, then rinse and pat dry. Use once a week. Dairy-free ice cream. Whether you have food sensitivities or you just need a sweet treat, this sensible dessert requires few ingredients. Peel, chop, and freeze 2 medium ripe bananas. Blend frozen chunks with 1 to 2 tablespoons unsweetened coconut milk and 1/8 teaspoon vanilla. Drizzle in a little more liquid if you prefer a creamier texture. Optional add-ins, 1 tablespoon matcha or cocoa powder, a few blueberries or strawberries, or 1 tablespoon dark chocolate chips for an indulgence. I'll now be reading another article in Prevention's Wellness section entitled Natural Fixes, Beat Anxiety with Sound by Hannah Chenoweth. Let the beat drop your anxiety levels. We're not talking about any old beats, but ones some therapists are using as a form of sound wave therapy to help their patients combat anxiety. They're called binaural beats. And here, Brian Nguyen, PhD, a clinical psychologist and the chief clinical officer at Addiction Treatment Center Journey Pure, explains how they work. First off, what are binaural beats? For starters, it's helpful to know that in everyday life, the left and the right ear receive slightly different frequencies of sound, but the brain registers them as a single noise. The difference between those two frequencies is the binaural beat, a pulse in your brain that your conscious mind is unaware of. For example, if your left ear receives a frequency of 100 hertz and your right ear receives 90 hertz, your brain perceives a binaural beat of 10 hertz. Okay then, how does this relate to anxiety? Some musical tracks are designed to create specific binaural beats in your brain when you listen to them, even though they just sound like calming tunes. These beats create shifts in brain waves that affect mood and cognition, so you can choose an audio track that will result in a frequency that produces an effect like less anxiety, better REM sleep or concentration, more creativity, or greater alertness. Patients tend to listen to them with earphones and in a place without distractions for at least 30 minutes. You don't have to close your eyes, but many people do. Some folks play binaural beats during meditation or before sleep, too. How do I know what to listen to? Audio tracks with binaural beats are easy to find online, and there are also CDs available. However, know that sometimes an audio file is compressed to the point that it loses its effect, so you may want to ask your therapist if they can recommend specific binaural beat audio tracks that have worked for other patients. Keep in mind, much is still unknown about this therapy, so binaural beats are not recommended for anyone who has suffered seizures or has a pacemaker or other heart problems, pregnant women, kids, or those operating heavy machinery. What does the research say? In one small study, people had a 26% drop in anxiety symptoms after listening to binaural beats for at least 20 minutes daily for 2 weeks in combination with therapy. Other studies show that binaural beats may benefit patients experiencing anxiety before surgery. However, research is inconclusive about the clinical benefits, so it's not a replacement for typical anxiety treatments. How quickly can I expect to feel better? Some people start to notice their anxiety lessening the first time they listen to binaural beats, while others may need to listen longer. Give it 3 weeks, and if you don't notice a change, try a different frequency, a different type of sound, or an audio track created by someone else. People who listen to binaural beats daily for an extended period reap the most benefits. I'll now be reading an article in Prevention Science section entitled Five Myths About Food and Health by Kate Rockwood. Illustrations by Andrea DeSantis. The right nutrients can help your health, but some dubious claims persist. Myth number one, orange juice can ward off a cold. Mythbuster. A glass a day or even a mega dose of vitamin C in a supplement probably won't keep the rhinovirus at bay. A review of 30 studies found that taking 200 milligrams or more of vitamin C didn't prevent colds in most people. If you do get slammed, however, C may help shorten the duration of your symptoms a little, the study found. And while not a magic bullet, it does play a critical role in helping your immune system. Aim for between 75 milligrams and 90 milligrams a day, as about as much as you would find in an orange, a cup of broccoli, or a cup of sliced strawberries. When you find yourself coughing and sneezing, relieve symptoms by drinking plenty of fluids, taking a warm shower to moisten the nasal mucous membranes, getting extra sleep, and doing some gentle exercise, says William Schaffner, MD, a professor of preventive medicine at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. Myth number two, cranberry juice is best for a UTI. Mythbuster, you may be a fan of the cran, but plain old water is better. A JAMA study found that women with recurring urinary tract infections, UTIs, who consumed an additional 1.5 liters of water daily were less likely to get another one. In a different study, women who drank 8 ounces of cranberry juice twice a day for 6 months were no less likely to get another UTI than those who didn't. You may have better luck with a cranberry supplement. Limited evidence suggests that taking 500 milligrams of cranberry a day in capsule form may reduce the risk of recurring UTIs, perhaps because the larger concentration of A-type proanthocyanidins may help prevent bacteria from sticking to urinary tract walls, says Jennifer McDaniel, MS, RDN, owner of McDaniel Nutrition Therapy. If you think you have a UTI, get a test quickly and take any antibiotics you're prescribed. An untreated UTI could progress into a kidney infection. Myth number three, pasta and bread give you brain fog. Mythbuster, not unless you're one of the relatively few who have a true allergy to or intolerance of gluten or wheat, which can be diagnosed by a doctor. For most people, it's eating too few carbs that can leave them feeling sleepy and unfocused, both signs of low blood sugar. The starches and sugars and carbohydrates are the body's and brain's main source of fuel, McDaniel says. To feel your sharpest, go for whole grain, whole food-based carbs. Think whole wheat pasta, oats, beans, whole fruits, and veggies, as they offer fiber and lots of vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants, unlike processed breads, cereals, and desserts. Foods in the latter groups can spike your blood sugar, leaving you tired and foggy when it comes crashing down. Myth number four, dairy makes you more mucousy. Mythbuster, nope. Studies have found that drinking milk has no effect on the amount of mucus people make. Also, dairy does not objectively affect any lung function, says Rand Goldman, MD, a professor in the Department of Pediatrics at the University of British Columbia. Dr. Goldman attributes this myth to influential 20th century pediatrician Benjamin Spock, MD, and Moses Maimonides, a 12th century physician who popularized the idea. The research we have today doesn't support those esteemed doctors' choices, Dr. Goldman says. So unless you have an allergy to or intolerance of dairy, there's no reason to skip the ice cream. Fight phlegm with hydration, sleep, and cool mist humidifiers, and keep allergens in check by giving your vacuum cleaner a workout. Myth number 5, apple cider vinegar helps prevent cancer. Mythbuster, there's no evidence that trendy ACV can prevent or treat cancer, Dr. Schaffner says. One study showed that acetic acid killed tumor cells, but those were rat cells in a lab. Also, it's nearly impossible to change the acidity of your blood through what you eat or drink, even if that might affect cancer risk. Eating certain foods is associated with reduced risk of certain types of cancer, however. Some studies have shown a connection between consuming cruciferous vegetables, such as broccoli and kale, and lower risk. And people who generally stick to produce, whole grains, low-fat dairy, and lean proteins, and go easy on red meat, alcohol, and sugar, tend to have lower risk, McDaniel says. I'll now be reading an article from Prevention Science section entitled, Does It Work? Memory Boosters by Stephanie Anderson Whitmer. Misplaced your face mask when it turned out to be on your face, or forgotten the name of an actor you like. It could be the past year's stress, sleepless nights, and multitasking catching up with you. All those factors can make you foggy-headed and forgetful, says Sheena Jocelyn, PhD, a senior neuroscientist at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, Canada. Research consistently shows that eating a healthy diet, exercising regularly, and getting a good night's sleep are some of the best ways to keep your brain sharp, but several products claim to boost memory. We asked experts which to consider and which to forget. If you notice a significant shift in your memory, ask your doc, your MD, about a cognitive evaluation. Brain games, what are they? App-based puzzles, memory games, and other mental challenges. What we know, there isn't much independent research showing that these games have long-term benefits. You can become much better at crossword puzzles, but that doesn't mean you're going to remember to feed the dog, says Barry Gordon, MD, PhD, a professor of neurology and cognitive science at Johns Hopkins. Should you try them? It can't hurt. They are fun and keep your brain active, though low-tech activities like reading do the same, Jocelyn says. Brands to try? Peak, Elevate, Idatech, all free in-app with in-app purchases. Caffeine in drinks or pills. What it is? A natural stimulant found in coffee, green and black tea, and supplements. What we know. The research isn't definitive, but coffee and tea appear to have some benefits for memory. A review of the Women's Health Initiative memory study found that those who consumed the most caffeine were less likely to develop cognitive impairment than those who drank the least. Caffeine can be taken in the form of supplements, which often also contain ingredients such as L-theanine, an amino acid that may offset caffeine jitters. Should you try it? Sure, but consult with your doctor before taking any supplements and consume your caffeine early in the day, as studies suggest that deep sleep is vital in protecting the brain against the onset of Alzheimer's. Brands to try. Gaia Herbs Green Tea Capsules, $28. Saqqara Nootropic Chocolates, $45. Bulletproof Neuromaster Capsules, $56. Brain-stimulating wearables. What they are? Headbands or forehead patches that deliver pulses via an electromagnetic coil, transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS, or electrical current, cranial alternating current stimulation, or TACS. What we know? Well, there's some evidence that TMS and TACS can improve age-related memory loss when administered by researchers or physicians. It's unclear whether consumers will get the same results with devices they use at home, says Dr. Gordon. Should you try them? Save your money. Instead, set a reminder on your phone or watch to take more steps or go for a run. Both experts advise aerobic exercise has been shown to build new brain cells in animal tests and increase blood flow to the brain. I'll now be reading an article in Prevention's Family section entitled Spring Forward Fun by Mary Giles. Daylight savings time begins March 14, so it's the perfect opportunity to play around with clocks. These games will teach kids about time and get them moving on a rainy day. Clock Quiz. Use this oversized activity to show your kids how to read an analog clock and explain the time change. To prepare, write the numbers 1 through 12 on a large piece of paper. Spread them on the floor in the shape of a clock face. Tape a few pieces of paper together, draw clock hands on them, and label them hour and minute. Show your kids how a clock works, then call out times, 2 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and challenge them to move the hands to the correct positions. After you explain about moving the clock forward for daylight savings time, have them jump or spring forward 1 hour on the clock. Repeat until they get tired. The Great Time Hunt. Here's a fun way to put plastic Easter eggs to good use and let your kids practice telling time. With a marker, write a digital time, say 3:30, on one half of each egg and draw the corresponding analog time on the other half. Hide the egg halves. When your kids have found them all, see if they can match the digital half of each egg to the analog half. Challenge Circuit. Write 7 or 8 time-related questions on cards. For instance, what time did you get up this morning? What time is 2 hours earlier than lunchtime? And for daylight savings time this Sunday, will we set our clocks forward or back 1 hour? Number the questions, then spread them around your home. Create numbered answer sheets. At Go, have the kids race around from challenge to challenge in any order, writing their answers in the correct numbered slots on their paper. The person or team to finish with the most correct answers wins. I'll now be reading an article from Prevention's Pulse section entitled, Go Ahead, Eat the Garnish. If you've been pushing aside the delicate little leaves decorating your takeout steak or salmon, don't. Those are microgreens, super young and tender leafy greens that most vegetables, grains, and herbs produce, and they're shown to have higher concentrations of phytochemicals and other antioxidants like beta-carotene than leaves harvested from mature plants. They're also safer than sprouts, which often carry the risk of foodborne illness, because they're grown in less moist environments and the roots are removed during harvest. And they can be grown easily indoors, so they're sustainable to boot. With a crunchy and earthy taste, they're great on a salad or piled atop an omelet, meat, or a side dish of veggies or grains. Look for microgreens at your local specialty food store. And you may even see them in the organic produce section of your regular supermarket. You can also grow your own with kits from Back to the Roots or Hamama. And here's a prevention pick. Right away worry. Looking for a new way to get a little stress relief? Silk plus Sonder is a unique journaling experience that seeks to ease your tensions. Sign up for a subscription and you'll receive a beautiful notebook each month filled with recipes, wellness tips, pretty coloring pages, and plenty of blank space to scribble away. You'll also get access to a private online community to share inspo and relaxation tricks, as well as a digital hub filled with learning tools to help further support mental wellness. $20 per month, silkensonder.com. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Adrienne Booker with Prevention. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 68 and clear. Tonight, it will be cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the low 70s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, and welcome to our program. My name is Penae McBride, and I will be reading Women's Health here on Sight Into Sound Radio. Today's article comes from the winter and spring issue of Health Magazine's special edition, Self-Care, the ingredients for health and happiness. It's all about you. Self-care has been a popular buzzword for years, but its definition and how we practice it have evolved in recent years. What does it mean to us now? When an aircraft hits turbulence and those oxygen masks come tumbling down, you're supposed to place the mask over your own mouth and nose before turning to help others. There's a good reason for that. Without oxygen, you'll quickly lose consciousness and won't be of any use to anyone. It shouldn't come as a surprise, then, that the same principle applies when it comes to ourselves in our day-to-day lives. Too many of us wear a superhero cape and rarely, if ever, take it off. A 2018 Cleveland Clinic survey of women with kids under the age of 18 found that fewer than half regularly practice self-care, or activities we do on purpose to nourish our physical, mental, and emotional health. Fewer than a third eat right and exercise, and less than 20% ever chill out with friends. Women without children have a problem hanging up that cape too, with only about half reporting that they regularly make it a priority to get some R&R. But self-care in this day and age is more important than ever. We may not even realize it, but we all have anxiety simmering underneath the surface that diminishes all of our internal resources, says Tracy Magnio, who is a psychologist at Montefiore Medical Center in the Bronx, New York. Women are also used to multitasking and always have so many balls in the air. It's easy for us to turn our energy towards supporting others without focusing on ourselves. But if we don't take time just for us, we'll become depleted. Part of this may be because many women instinctively shy away from the word self-care, viewing it as a luxury that they simply can't afford. It seems too frivolous to soak in a warm bubble bath, for example, while your partner stews about losing their job and your kids are behind in their Zoom school. But the self-care movement actually started in the 1950s in an effort to help people who were institutionalized learn how to tend to such basic necessities as grooming and shaving, says Elspeth Cameron Ritchie, M.D., a chair of psychiatry at MedStar Washington Hospital Center in Washington, D.C. Then, in the 1970s, the term was appropriated by the Black Panther movement as a way to encourage Black Americans to take care of themselves. For example, getting screened for the genetic disorder sickle cell anemia. In the 1980s, Black female activist Audre Lorde wrote, "Caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it's self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare." Gradually, it evolved from the civil rights movement to the women's movement, as women began to realize that between home and work and children, they were juggling so much, and if they didn't take care of themselves, they couldn't take care of other people, explains Ritchie. It really became about women setting boundaries, how to say no, that they could fit in time to get enough sleep and eat right and stay somewhat active so that they could stay healthy enough to get on with their lives, adds Karen Stewart, M.D., a psychiatrist at Kaiser Permanente in Atlanta. If you're struggling with how to establish a self-care routine, start with the basics, advises C. Vail Wright, Ph.D., Senior Director of Healthcare Innovation at the American Psychological Association. Set a hard and fast rule to stick to a bedtime that allows you to get at least 7 hours of sleep. Vow to make sure you have 5+ servings of fruits and vegetables every day. Get outside to go for a walk in the fresh air for a minimum of 20 minutes every day. Make sure you connect with at least one close friend or family member a few times every week. Even if all you can manage is a 10-minute chat via FaceTime. If you can do those four things on a routine basis, you've got a solid foundation for already practicing self-care, says Wright. You'll be in a place where you're better able to be reflective and figure out which activities are giving you joy and allowing you to be in the moment, instead of ruminating about the past or the future. While self-care is crucial for everyone, it's particularly key if you're finding that you're displaying clear signs of anxiety or depression, says Stewart, like snapping at your kids over little things or not finding joy in activities you normally love to do, like curling up with a good book or watching Netflix with your partner. In these highly charged times, you really need the ability to be able to take a deep breath and say, "I can do this." One way to nurture yourself in these stressful moments is to engage in a few positive thinking exercises. Take a moment to silently express gratitude for all that is positive in your life. Snuggling with your pooch or the sun shining during your morning run. Focus on what you have control over rather than more abstract things that you don't have control over. If you're too overwhelmed to do all of this, and let's face it, that's probably the case for most of us, Stewart says you can utilize an app such as My Strength, which helps you track your mood and set goals. It allows you to do a quick assessment of what's going on with your life and assess what activities will be most useful to you, whether it's taking a walk or indulging in some deep breathing. Whatever you choose, it's important that you take at least 15 minutes to do it every day. Schedule it just like you would schedule your child's pediatrician appointment. That way, it's on your calendar and automatically becomes another part of your day. It's also important to take a moment to analyze the obstacles that may be getting in the way of a solid self-care routine. You have to ask yourself the hard questions and come up with solutions. Maybe it's ordering groceries online twice a week so you don't have to waste a couple of hours in the grocery store, or asking your kids to pitch in and do some of the chores, or insisting your spouse do his or her share of the errands and housework. There's still this belief among women that if they're asking for help, they've failed. But we need to realize that energy is a finite resource that needs to be replenished from time to time. It's just like filling your car up with gas. We cannot allow our bodies to get to the point that they're running on empty. It's a challenge that Stewart herself has gradually learned to take on. In the past, she had satisfied her need for self-care and her yearning for adventure by traveling to exotic spots such as New Zealand to do activities like whitewater rafting and bungee jumping. Now she stays closer to home. I go on weekend hikes where I check out local state parks, and during the week, I make sure I get in some short walks while listening to my favorite podcast, Girl Trek, which focuses on African American women in history. A couple of evenings a week, she makes sure she winds down over a gourmet meal, complete with wine. It's a challenge fitting it in. Yes, it is. And I'm the first to admit that I'm not perfect at it, she says. Taking time for ourselves is daunting. But the more we do it, the more we prepare ourselves to be our best selves in our lives. The new future of self-care. Self-care is more than an Instagrammable hashtag or a category in your shopping cart. It's about centering yourself, investing in your relationships, and prioritizing your mental well-being. Rocio Rosales Meza spent a decade working toward a PhD in counseling psychology and another decade working toward securing tenure as a professor. Somewhere along the way, after years of leveraging her body in the pursuit of these goals, she fell ill. I thought that if I did all these things that they told me to do, then the promise was a tenured position, a secure job for life, says Rosales Meza. Eventually, she developed a disability which required an ongoing medical leave. After not improving, she was fired from the position she had believed would be a lifetime role. It was a revealing moment, one that led to a deeper understanding of the importance of taking care of herself and ultimately to a career shift. This fear that capitalism has instilled in us about work is really tied to the illusion of safety. We think that maybe in 40 years we'll have retirement, and the truth is that none of us are really promised that time right now. We really have to radically change the way we work, the way we connect with each other, and the way we connect with ourselves. Because none of what we're doing is sustainable. Rosales Meza's story illustrates a number of things. The all-too-common trappings of overwork in the pursuit of success, burnout, and its resulting toll on our mental and physical well-being, and the need to care for ourselves as a tool to help cope with life's difficulties. Enter self-care. In the past decade, the concept of self-care has reached nearly every area of popular culture, from luxury editorial brands and app products to series on streaming networks, a cottage industry of wellness influencer sponsorships, and ongoing coverage of its merits and shortcomings. But as pervasive as the concept of self-care may be, how it's defined in the present moment is a moving target. It's a remarkably flexible term, undergoing an evolution beyond a 36 million strong hashtag on Instagram, or a stopgap for a lack of mental health resources, into something that for many is a lifeline in an uncertain future. The idea has existed as a resource, a trend, and an ideal for decades prior to this moment. You're listening to Women's Health on Sight into Sound Radio. You can listen to Sight into Sound on one of our specially tuned radios, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices. You can also listen at your convenience on our archives page at sightintosound.org. We are Sight into Sound Radio since 1967. And now back to our article. Although the World Health Organization gives definition to the nebulous shape of self-care, outlining it as the ability of individuals, families, and communities to promote health, prevent disease, maintain health, and to cope with illness and disability with or without the support of a healthcare provider. Awareness of the term has ebbed and flowed throughout history. French philosopher and historian Michel Foucault explored self-care's ancient Greek origins and how care of the self is the result of a reconception of two ancient injunctions, care for oneself and know oneself. But it was a burst of light by Audre Lorde that received the subject among queer feminist activist communities, recentering the idea of self-care as a radical political act and cementing its origins in popular culture. Particularly in the past decade, Lorde's ideas about self-care, written during her second battle with cancer, and ongoing activism have taken on a status as a rallying cry and a movement. Although author Jordan Kissner described in The New Yorker that self-care was powered mostly by straight, affluent white women who, although apparently feeling a new vulnerability in the wake of the election, are not traditionally the segment of American society in the greatest need of affirmation, ideas such as this have evolved to redefine self-care once again. In contrast to consumerist ideals of self-care, in which affluence is a prerequisite, a new vision for self-care draws from Lorde's activist and community organizing work, in which caring for yourself is a tool of resilience, a way to preserve well-being in the face of an increasingly hostile world. While the past year has been marked by the multiplying chaos of a global pandemic, racial reckoning, and climate change, among these mass-scale events are the innumerable personal ones, the intimate grief of a lost loved one, the stress of mass unemployment, and the perpetual anxiety about environmental disasters. In a more general view, more than 45 million Americans, almost 20% of the population, are experiencing a mental illness, according to nonprofit Mental Health America's 2020 report on the state of mental health in the country. Those numbers may be unsurprising when considering the scale of issues facing the average American today. The Mental Health America report also showed that 10.3 million United States adults have serious thoughts of suicide, an increase of nearly 450,000 people from the previous year, and 57% of adults with a mental illness receive no treatment. In the past decade, and in the uncertainty of a looming future, caring for yourself has become a vital movement as we are more focused on nurturing ourselves mentally and physically in real and lasting ways than ever before. Understanding more clearly what self-care is and the ways it is evolving gives us insight into how we might practice self-care in our daily lives, including holistic approaches to healing the mind and body, which take personal identity into account. Rosales Mesa's work now focuses on facilitating mental, emotional, and spiritual healing from a decolonial perspective, one that centers on spirituality and aims to address the generational trauma of colonization, particularly for women of color. I think of self-care as returning to our sacred ways, returning to being the whole person, she says. We've been taught to compartmentalize our mental health, separate from our physical health, separate from our spirituality. And so self-care really is about, how do I bring these parts of me together so that I can be whole and so that I can be well? According to Rosales Mesa, part of how she defines self-care also takes into account the responsibility that individuals have to the communities to which they belong, whether that is as a person of color or as someone who is black, indigenous, or white. If we are not well, then it's going to be difficult for us to show up for others, and especially in this time. It's going to be difficult for us to show up in the way that the world needs us to show up. What then does self-care look like in everyday practice? It's a matter of shifting beyond the superficial, beyond skincare masks, day spas, and brunches, to a deeper understanding of how the brain and body function, both in the self and in relation to others. I'm not sure we really need a self-care industry per se. Self-care doesn't require buying anything. You don't need to spend money to feel better. You just need to put time into activities that feel nutritious for your well-being. But most of those don't cost a thing, says Laurie Santos, PhD, a cognitive scientist and professor of psychology at Yale University, who teaches psychology and the good life, which is Yale's most popular class in its more than 300-year history. Now available to the public online through Coursera as The Science of Well-Being, and counting millions among its registered students, the class offers an investigation into what makes people happy, revealing misconceptions about happiness in an effort to better integrate wellness practice in everyday life. Santos says that research suggests that if you want to improve your well-being, it's important to consider your relationship to others, what she describes as being other-oriented. According to Santos, research shows that being social makes us happier, which means that practicing self-care inherently requires prioritizing quality time with friends and people you care about. The science also shows that we can boost our own mood by voluntarily doing nice things for others, she says, particularly in this moment of social uprising and racial reckoning. It's telling that self-care, while focusing on others, echoes decolonial practices, Black and Indigenous modes of understanding the self and self-care. If we want to have the emotional bandwidth for the causes we care about, we need to make sure we save time for focusing on our own mental health, Santos says. Self-care, according to science, is a lot about our behaviors, doing activities that are nutritious for our well-being, like connecting with our friends or engaging in challenging leisure activity, can boost your mood. But self-care also involves developing a mindset of being present and giving yourself time to savor. For Melissa Carter, the Senior Director for the Global Spiritual Life at New York University, this is a moment when systemic change is being demanded of all of us, and self-care that goes beyond purchasing objects or indulgences is necessary to navigate that change. Over the past decade, Carter has centered her work on the intersection of spirituality, the relationship between social justice and mindfulness, and their connection with belonging and self-care. Similarly, she describes the practice of self-care as a personal responsibility, both to the self and others. When I think of self-care, I think of community care as well. We have a responsibility to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of each other. And that could be from wearing a mask to fighting the injustices in the world, to not allowing convenience to guide us, but to allow us to rise together to stand for human rights. She believes that self-care is the method to achieve these collective goals. In the past year, as the pandemic has forced most of the world to live at a distance, technology-fueled approaches to self-care in its many forms have become ubiquitous. Among them, the meditation app Headspace has risen to the top. When the pandemic began, the app offered free subscriptions to people who had lost their jobs, and it still offers some free content. In 2017, a study in the Journal of Pediatric Nursing, Headspace was shown to improve job satisfaction and reduce burnout among health professionals, something vital to their self-care and resilience in the face of the global health crisis. As Sarah Rotmoski, the Director of Health Partners at Headspace, describes it, in pre-pandemic times, we saw the self-care trend primarily focusing on physical health and external practices. In 2020, that all changed. The world started paying closer attention to mental health and wellness, including meditation and mindfulness apps like Headspace into their daily self-care routines. People all over the world have been experiencing unprecedented stress, anxiety, and uncertainty. As the global community seeks healthy ways of coping with worry and anxiety, Headspace provides science-backed resources to help manage those stressors. Right now, more than ever, we need people contributing to society to move forward and to heal. You are wanted and needed in that healing process, and you have a specific role that you're being asked to play. Being in an intimate dialogue with the self can help you get there. We have come to the end of our program. I have been reading Women's Health. You can hear Women's Health Wednesday morning at 6 and Tuesday evening at 6. I'm Panay McBride, and this has been a production of Sight into Sound Radio, Houston, Texas.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
When it's open, Midland County Public Library, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Curbside pickup at Downtown Branch, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday.
For the lighter side of local news, Recording Library of West Texas brings you the Lifestyle Show. Features from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. We'll feature fun local stories about people in our community, plus columns such as gardening and food. The Lifestyle Show, Friday mornings at 6 and repeated Sunday nights at 7:30 and Thursdays at 4:30 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
She comes down from Yellow Mountain on a dark flat land she rides on a pony she named Wildfire with a whirlwind by her side on a cold Nebraska night. They say she died one winter when there came a killing frost and the pony she named Wildfire busted down its stall in a blizzard. He was lost. But there came an early snow. There's been a hoot owl howling by my window now for 6 nights.